Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Today, not so new. We're going back in time, Ben.
We're going to go back in time.
You made a podcast out of old Star Trek episodes? There's a good reason for that, though. We're calling it research, right?
Yeah.
How do we get to know Star Trek Discovery better than by going back in time and examining the episodes of the original series that influenced it? And one of the characters that was a great influence on a few episodes of Star Trek Discovery was Harry Mudd, right?
Yeah, he's in a couple episodes of season one, and then he got a short Trex last round. Did you happen to reacquaint yourself with the short Trex when rewatching this?
No, did you?
I did, because I finished watching this episode, and it occurred to me that there was a lot of android crap in this episode, and that was kind of the mechanic of the Harry Mudd short Trek.
Yeah, I remember a room full of his robots at the very end.
Yeah, so I went and rewatched that. There are not any like specific connections between that episode and this. There's no indication that those robots come from the same source as the robots in this episode.
It would indicate a dabbling, though, right? Because if this episode of original series is set 10 years into the future of what we're seeing in Discovery, then
yeah,
I guess why would they be the same?
I wondered about that timeline, because I also watched the little denouement on Madness to Make the Sanest Man
Madness
Go Mad.
Madness to Make the Man Go Mad. Yeah.
Yeah. Madness to Really Put Someone in a Tailspin or Whatever, I believe is the official title of the season one episode.
Parenthetically, they just called it Madness, huh?
Yeah. What are you going to do? you know, he gets sort of, like, his punishment is getting reunited with his beloved Stella, who is a character in this. The actress playing Stella in Discovery is a very young woman. She looks to be
right
in her maybe mid-20s. And the Stella in this episode is much more than 10 years older than mid-20s, I would say.
I did go back and rewatch the end of that episode for the Stella part, because Stella played such a central role.
They nailed the hair color.
Yeah. Yeah, but outside of that, not much of a resemblance in manner or appearance, I would say.
I feel like if you're a showrunner and like a writer plunks this script down on your desk and goes, done with the episode, and you start reading it, you're like forced to consider what is going on with this writer back at home with their spouse.
Who hurt you? Do you need some time off?
Show me on the android where your spouse nagged you.
God, no kidding.
Like, it's so weird that that's so many shows and
things from the 60s are just like, women, can't live with them.
Can't live with them, but at least we can grab their asses. Yeah, what an incredible artifact this is.
I cannot imagine a TV show today having a character who's taking delight in an imprisoned facsimile of their wife as much as this. And also, I mean, like, he's a villain, but he's supposed to be kind of a lovable rogue also.
Sure. He's a scamp.
He's a piece of shit, in my opinion.
Oh, jeez. Just got to make that clear for everyone. Benjamin R. Harrison is anti-Mud.
Yeah. If I see you at the Star Trek convention dressed up as this guy, I'm going to kick you in the nuts.
Wow. Looks like I will be going solo henceforth to all future Star Trek conventions. But today we're stuck together, Ben, as we discuss a notable original series episode. It's Season 2, Episode 12, I, Mud. And it begins with kind of a fun McCoy scene. McCoy is suspicious of a random crewman whose only crime is acting a little too much like Spock.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those McCoy is suspicious of this guy and rattles off the list of traits that provoke this suspicion, and they happen to line up with traits that Spock has.
The ears make all of the difference.
The only difference, I guess, is this guy crewman Norman is an absolute unit, and Spock is not.
Mr. Norman has been hitting the gym quite a bit, for sure. You don't hear about crewmen that Starfleet officers hate that often.
Right. And I like that quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's like any other workplace. You're going to get along with some people, and then some people are going to rub you the wrong way.
Mr. Norman has been aboard for a little while, it seems like. He's been aboard long enough to cancel a couple of trips to Six Bay for his onboarding physical.
Yeah, McCoy really wants to dig around that nook.
I've got to get to the bottom of it and see what makes it tick.
God damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor who really likes dick.
Turn your head and cough. Now turn it the other way and cough again. Now look up at the ceiling and cough.
Now let me get behind you and reach through your legs.
Now make eye contact with me while I stick my finger up in here.
Now let's add a second. And a third.
Give it another cough.
My God, man. Your rectal cavity is as large as I've ever seen.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor and a plumber.
That is that joke's natural conclusion.
So he's been on board for a while, but he kind of walks right past Spock and McCoy in the hallway and directly to auxiliary control, which is a room with a bunch of switches and knobs and one ensign sitting at a desk. He does a very casual karate chop to the ensign's neck, which totally incapacitates him, which I really love the idea that, like, his motor control is so fine and precise that it doesn't need to look violent for it to knock somebody out.
Yeah. He's a one chop chump.
But Mr. Norman sets about flicking a lot of switches and turning a lot of dials, and up on the bridge they realize that something is amiss.
Yeah, what's amiss is they should have stationed more than one person at auxiliary control, right?
Yeah, and maybe not an ensign. Like, that seems like a pretty important part of the ship.
As soon as you're able to take control of auxiliary control, you have the keys to the whole ship. And up on the bridge, they're wondering what the hell is going on because they've changed course. And they don't know why, and they can't get control back.
This is a trope we see all the time in TNG. Definitely Data hijacked the ship in this way at one point.
Data never had the arms of this guy, though.
No, yeah. Data didn't need him, though. You know, he had all the strength, but
right.
But he didn't show it. He was, I guess, a grower, not a shower. In the way that Mr. Norman is.
Ben, if we just keep this up, we're going to break our own records for dick jokes. Like, we've got to remain calm.
All right, focus.
This is within our reach.
Yeah. So they send a little security team down to auxiliary control. The three red shirts run down there and find the knocked out ensign. They're radioing up and explaining what's going on. And the way that they're talking about it on the bridge is that the ship has been invaded. They have an intruder. So they realize that the intruder is now in engineering because he goes down and beats the shit out of Scotty and all of his engineering guys down there.
Scotty's not a one-chop chump, is
no.
he?
No. Scotty seems very, very fucked up. Like he's slumped over one of these desks and like unable to even use the radio. He's in so much pain.
I mean, I'm not laughing at Scotty's pain, but like there's a certain drama to it that I do enjoy.
Yeah.
There's a dramatic panache.
Every time I watch an episode of TOS, I'm looking at Jimmy Doohan's hands.
Yeah.
It's all I can do. And he is unbelievably good at keeping them, you know, kind of off camera.
He's great.
I guess it's his right hand that he's missing the finger.
It's incredible how well he camouflages this.
You can tell somebody's a real pro, TV pro or movie pro, when they understand like what the camera can and can't see.
Yeah.
You know, like they walk on set, they're like, okay, we're shooting on a 50 millimeter lens. I know exactly where the frame is, you know?
Yep.
Doohan is a pro.
Sure is. And not a pro at defending himself, though, against the attack of Norman.
Yeah. Norman winds up on the bridge as Kirk is radioing to dispatch security to engineering. So he's also presumably super fast.
Right.
And he explains that the ship is now under our control, and that we is Robotman.
Right, and any attempt to seize control from the robots will result in the ship exploding, because he's wired the engines to the steering wheel, I guess.
There's a pretty intense shot where he's like explaining what he is, and the camera pans down and he pulls up his shirt and it looks like he's about to pull down the front of his trousers and show that big crank off. But
instead he's got jacked abs.
Yeah. This is not the effect that they had originally, right? This is definitely like a CG remaster thing.
This has got the phone inside Data's body beat as far as effects.
Yeah.
It's way good.
It's very good. The seamless flap is also like really well done.
It disappears. It's nice.
How they do that? It used to be that you could find the original like crappy version. Is Hulu still got the original?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what value that has at this point.
I just want to see what the belly computer looks like in the original.
Yeah. You want to A/B that?
Is it just like a calculator from the bank that you get for free for opening a new account?
Yeah, as soon as he opens his belly flap, like it takes a second for the little solar panel to pick up the light and then it'll turn on. That's great. I wonder if you put your head up against Norman's tum, if you could hear the gears and switches go inside him. I would. That was all I was thinking about. Just lay my head in Norman's lap. Have him tell me everything's going to be okay.
What he winds up explaining is that they're going to be en route for several days. They're going to be heading to a planet at fairly high factor of warp. And he like crosses his arms and closes his eyes and goes to sleep. And just stands there with his legs spaced a little bit wider than hip width on the bridge for those 4 days.
He's the first Black Panther, right? He's sort of Wakanda Forevers and then goes into stasis.
I would have loved to see him just like...
He's an ally, Ben, okay?
Coated with a little layer of dust when they come out of warp.
It's fun. People emerge from the turbo lift and have to kind of walk around him. Not a great spot to stand for 4 days if you're Norman.
I know.
He doesn't grasp things like being polite and staying out of the way. He's just a robot man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he has a lot to learn, and that's part of why he's brought them there.
It's true.
So the away team beams down to this planet, and it's, I would say, the TOS A team of away teams. All you're missing, really, is Sulu, right?
Yeah, they've been handpicked by Norman, and you don't want to be left off of this kickball team.
It is Spock, McCoy, Uhura, Pavel Chekhov, and Captain Kirk. They arrive to find a certain villain from an episode past. It's Harry Mudd, Adam.
They got Mudd in the throne, and he's flanked by a couple of robo-babes. Two of the 500 fembots he says he has on the planet's surface.
Yeah.
And he is speaking from a position of authority, not just like kingly throned authority, but he has all the power. He has this army of fembots, and he tells them all to get comfortable because this is going to be their home forever.
He's made himself sovereign, and, you know, because the robots are super strong, as demonstrated by their communicator crushing fists, they're kind of an unbeatable force.
And they eat old people's medicine for fuel.
Mud gestures towards the garbage can full of communicator shards and is like, just imagine what Alice could do to a dick. Very painful.
And yet, super alluring. They have a lot of fun with twins in this episode because the two ladies flanking him are twins, but then like whenever they cut the camera away to Kirk and the gang, like one of them is always in the shot, so it kind of places them all over the room.
Yeah, fun casting challenge to gather all of the twins of an area together, but the consequence is an episode that does not rely heavily on a bunch of post-production. Like, you get some practical twins on the set.
Yeah.
You're made in the shade.
They do a couple of shots where they're definitely, like, comping three shots together, but it's just, mm-hmm. like, so that they can have the same two twins on either side of the throne, in the throne right. room or whatever. And, they have a lot of fun with it.
Kirk's asking Mudd the question that's on all of our minds, which is, do you fuck these chicks, Mudd? And also, how did you end up here? Because the last time we saw Mudd, he was on that Rigel mining planet. And what Mudd goes on to say is that he escaped and then sort of created a subsistence living around selling stolen patents.
Yeah.
And he's wanted on a number of planets. A number of planets want him dead.
Leave it to Star Trek to have a character arc that hinges on patent piracy.
Right. And so he stole a little ship and drifted to the planet where they're at right now.
What is up with these planets where the penalty for fraud is death?
Yeah, and specifically gas death or whatever death you choose off of their weird death penalty menu.
Yeah. Was he at the Justice Planet? Is that where he got the idea to have all these androids rock this amount of nuck?
Yeah. You know what? I love that headcanon. That totally works out. The problem with Mudd in this instance is that he's bored. And for some reason, the androids won't let him go unless he replaces himself with a bunch of humans for them to study. Which begs the question, who is in charge here?
Right. He has declared himself sovereign, but it is really in name only, because while the androids seem to want to be his servant class, they also kind of wield all the power.
Right.
And the deal he cut with them was like, listen, I'll get you like a bunch of humans, way better humans than me, and you guys can study them, and then you can let me go.
You will not believe how Jim Kirk fucks.
You guys will finally know what to do with those things.
So he's got all these robots, and he has one very special robot unit modeled after his wife, Stella, who is like sort of in a shrine, a shrew shrine.
Yeah.
He like sort of toys with it in an ugly way.
It's like one of those exhibits at the Science Museum where you push a button and the dinosaur roars or whatever.
Yeah.
You push the button, the light comes on.
Marcord, Fenton, Mudd, what have you been up to?
Pushes the button again, the lights go down.
It's a Hall of Presidents equivalent of a bad marriage.
Her complaints seem pretty fair, right? Like, you've been out drinking, you never do any of the housework you tell me you're going to do, kind of complaints.
Come on, Ben, he's just trying to have some fun. Why don't you lay off?
All right. I don't mean to pile on Harry Mudd, villain who is wanted for capital crimes like fraud.
You know what? Harry Mudd just wants to go out and hang with his friends. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And by the way, much like less severe crimes like human trafficking.
Harry Mudd's an adult. He doesn't have a curfew, all right?
Yeah.
Or a bedtime.
I just think it's funny that the punishment for human trafficking is way less bad than the punishment for fraud.
Everyone knows your position on human trafficking, Ben.
Good. But just to remind everybody, I'm against it.
So the backstory on these robots is that they were made by the Makers, which is a great name for the makers of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these makers died when their sun went nova, and so these robots floated around the galaxy looking for a purpose, and it was Harry Mudd that gave them that purpose.
Yeah.
And that purpose, Ben, was to fuck him.
And hence the 500 editions of this one particular model, because
right.
Yeah, this is the one that he fancies the most. But there are other models, which is an interesting idea, right? Like, there didn't need to be all these twins. Like, they could have just had a bunch of androids that all look different.
Yeah. Original series Star Trek really has interesting tone to me because they never break the feeling of being explorers. And if you're always in explorer mode, I think it's really hard to feel like a character is ever in any danger.
Right.
Like, they never lose their essential curiosity about their situation. And so when they observe the robots and they observe Harry Mudd's interactions with them, it never goes dark. Like the episode where Data's kidnapped and made to be that guy's zoo animal. Like,
yeah.
That episode's hella dark.
Yeah.
And this episode doesn't even come close to that kind of darkness.
Nobody in this episode goes, lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo.
Yeah. It's 60s dark, I guess.
Right. I would say that the darkest this episode gets is when Chekhov starts to process the sexual ramifications and makes the circle with his thumb and forefinger.
We could do a whole episode on Chekhov in this, in iMud. Holy moly.
Yeah. It's a weird, like, means to process the idea of a sex robot, right?
Right. What can you say about a sex robot in the 60s without directly interrogating all of the possibilities for a sex robot? That's what iMud asks and answers here.
Well, I can provide some insight, as my business has been going for quite some time, as I am eternal.
I never really wanted to write scripts of my own, but when people bring me in to punch up other scripts, that's very satisfying work for me.
I did as much as I could to remove the stuff about Stella, because I just couldn't relate to it as a man who loves his wife very much.
You will notice that all of the dancing in the episode was written and choreographed by me. Because me and my wife, Roshan, do enjoy the dancing.
I would say that if I made an autobiographical character in this episode, it is Chekhov, because he's the one that does the most dancing, and he's the one that is most excited about fucking a rubber woman.
They kind of divide and conquer, and by divide, I mean this crew just sort of breaks up, and by conquer, they just sort of explore the space on the planet's surface, trying to figure out who may be controlling all of these robots. The idea that Spock floats is that there's got to be a sort of central operating system controlling them all, and so they set out to find it.
Spock, like, just walks into the next room, and there it is.
Norman is touching the glowing Saudi Arabian orb just very, very casually while making it clear that he's assembled his costume from nothing but clothing he bought at To Exist. He's wearing a sort of a pouch underwear that that a type of man wears that is not me.
Yeah, yeah. The codpiece budget alone on this episode was through the roof.
It is a massive nuck.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular.
This is a giant cock.
No one notices it. Like, I'm expecting, like, McCoy to walk into the room and act like Scotty J from Boogie Nights, like, totally breaking down.
I'm sorry. I thought you were sending me signals.
I want to know if you like me, okay?
Anyways, I'm always available for it.
So Spock is asking him questions, and Norman appears to be getting his answers from a glowing necklace that he's wearing.
Yeah, they all have these necklaces on. The necklaces seem to be kind of like their serial numbers, but for the model, right? Like, Norman is one, and we see Alice number one a couple of times, I think.
Yeah, they're not treated as special, though. If you're a number one robot, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you're like the first copy and they get worse and worse.
Right. When you're the 69 robot, it doesn't mean anything, okay?
Right.
And so I wish you would stop asking.
Fucking calm down. But the 420 robot is really chill. And
oh, yeah.
They don't, you know, they don't comment on it, but that...
You never see the 420 robot in this episode, but you know where they're at.
Yeah. In that cloud of smoke, that's where.
Talking to Samson.
As they dilly-dally around on the planet, it becomes clear that the rest of the Enterprise crew has also been beamed down and that androids are up there replacing them. And Mutt explains, like, oh, yeah, like, I'm stealing your ship so that I can get out of here and the androids are going to be my crew. This is going to be great. So enjoy your life of plenty down here on the planet with these androids that can make anything you want.
It's a problem on two fronts because Kirk is... horrified that his ship has been filled with robots and his entire crew is on the surface, but also the crew that's on the surface is slowly being worn down by the many pleasures that the robots can provide, right?
Right.
Like, he's not sure that his crew can resist the temptations to the degree that they could be an effective resistance, and he isn't sure of their ability to actually come together to fight back in any way.
It's interesting, like, this idea I don't think you could do in TNG because at that point, you know, there's replicators and total abundance. Like, this is kind of an era of TOS where, like, I don't think they've talked about, like, post-scarcity or everybody can have anything they want whenever they want it as an idea. Yeah. Which is kind of like baseline in TNG. You know, that wouldn't have any appeal to a TNG person because they're like, yeah, like, I could get that, plus I live on that awesome starship. Why would I leave the starship?
Riker's like, I already have all the women. And Geordi's like, I have a great engineering lab. And Troy's like, I don't want to live forever. And those are specific things that are attractive to people like Scotty, Chekhov, and Uhura.
Right. I love the idea that the thing that is offered to Uhura is eternal life, and it's not offered really to anybody else.
Right.
And eternal beauty.
They come up with a really interesting idea. Could a contradiction short-circuit the robot's ability to process something logically? Like, if the robots are programmed to make the people happy and they say that the only thing that will make them happy is being on board the Entrepreneur, like, what do the robots do about that? And it becomes sort of a mission of theirs to confuse them in ways like this.
Yeah, and at a certain point, the robots realize that Harry Mudd is a no-good piece of shit. And so they're not going to take him with them after all. For the first time, he's kind of he is by necessity aligned with the crew of the Entrepreneur. So they put this like logic riddle scheme into effect and start to do everything they can to confuse the shit out of the robots.
The robots disclose that their way of becoming free is to enslave the human race by serving them.
Yeah, this kind of like bottom-up control by slaves.
We will transform ourselves into smartphones. Rendering the human race incapable of thinking for themselves or paying attention to their surroundings.
Smartphones with great big dicks. So, like, at this point, we've got 10 minutes of episode left, and most of that is just taken up by confusing bullshit. Like, the solution to the problem is for the crew and Mud to do as much confusing bullshit as they can.
This is what we were talking a little bit about offline, which was how strangely paced the TOS episodes are that we've seen, and especially this one.
Yeah. Like, they get, like, Uhura getting the robots thinking that she's betrayed the whole crew so that she can get this immortality. There's a whole, like, Russian dancing sequence. There's the fake Scotty playing the flute and the doctor playing the violin while Chekhov and Uhura dance.
Yeah, Ben, it's the control room where they finally get the upper hand on Norman, and they are able to make him surrender by deploying the most destructive force in the galaxy, and that is improv comedy. Because Kirk's Herald crew performs for Norman and his one-person audience, and the androids do not like improv.
No. They're like, you know, saying specifics and then and playing by rules. Like, that's not funny. You're just doing the same thing over and over again.
Norman's like, do not, like, hack. It's crazy.
Yeah.
This entire setup and the scene itself is bonkers.
Yeah. They kind of short-circuit Norman's brain. They're going to get out of there. And then they break it to Harry Mudd that they're leaving him behind.
Because the form of punishment that Kirk enjoys most is the marooning of people on planets. This happens all the time.
Yeah.
This isn't even the first time he's done it on the four TOS episodes you and I have watched together. Like, three quarters of the episodes, this is what he's doing.
Yeah, he really loves it.
It doesn't surprise me that it bites him in the ass.
It really has the same vibes as the end of the Discovery episode where Harry Mudd gets stuck with overly lovey Stella and her grumpy dad.
Right.
Like, kind of in a gilded cage of his own making is where they leave him.
He's left in the center of a swarm of Stellas just screaming at him. It's awful.
I thought a couple of the dresses worn by some of the twins in this final scene looked like maybe they were used... reused ones from Mudd's Women.
Oh yeah. The Maisie series and Barbara series androids are wearing costumes left over from Mudd's Women. So yeah, that would be true.
You know, that just shows the limits of Mudd's imagination, I guess.
It's too bad Sulu wasn't on this mission, right?
Yeah, he's up on the ship.
He keeps making up excuses to pick up bridge shifts while Norman's there. Like, you know, I could work swing if you need an extra person.
What if I turned my desk around and looked this direction?
I could hang my cape on his great big dong.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
Oh, I loved Norman's bonch. I mean, Norman's bonch gets fourth billing. It's incredible.
We've talked about that crank a lot, but we haven't talked about the fact that his nipples are rock hard in just about every scene he's in.
This is an episode about sex robots that really, like, neglects to discuss directly anything about sex robotics, but instead leans hard into like a robot dick, one robot's dick specifically, yeah. And his nipples. Like, it's as if like standards and practices was like, you can't make this about a race of sex robots, but I mean, the one robot's fine,
right?
And it's okay if he's male even. Wild stuff. I mean, this is one of those eps, Ben, that it's insanely paced, but it is a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed the hell out of watching the episode, and I really enjoyed talking about it. But it's hard to, like, you know, we do the do you like this episode part of every episode of Greatest Gen, and it doesn't fit TOS episodes the way it fits every other thing for some reason. And I can't really articulate why that is.
Right.
Like, I think it's because we know it's not good.
Right. You know, in watching this, I maybe more than ever was thinking to myself, was TOS meant to be a comedy series first and foremost?
Because it is satisfying in the way that comedies are. It's
right.
Just light popcorn fare.
Right. There are a lot of, like, big issues that they kind of sail right past in this episode. They don't sink their teeth into the big issues in the way that TNG often did.
Yeah.
In a heavier way.
I'm enjoying the exercise of watching TOS episodes because of that very reason. Like, it's just, it's not serious like a lot of other Trek, and I like it for that reason. What about you, Ben?
I kind of liked the episode. I'm glad I watched it. I don't think I ever need to rewatch it, though.
Nothing will make you like Harry Mudd.
Yeah, I'm against him.
Enemy number one for Benjamin R. Harrison.
Yeah. Well, Adam, one group of people who are not my enemy are the people who leave Priority One messages on our airspace. Do you want to check the inbox and see if we have any Priority One messages?
Sure do. That was the pivot of an android. It was so perfect, Ben.
It was a very casual karate chop of a pivot.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Eric. It is for you, Jokers. The message goes like this. Adam plus Ben, hello from Wellington, New Zealand. I'll get to the point. Why not hop a bunk bed and perform a show in NZ? There was drunk talk of a polar region tour in episode 227 of Greatest Gen, and I reckon we should make it happen.
Wow.
What would it take? Did you know Worldcon 2020 is here next year? I wrote them. If you get here, they would have you.
Huh.
Thoughts?
I think the problem is the getting there and the extremely high cost of airfare. If we could find a con that would fly us in, we would for sure do it, I think.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question.
If the con is not willing to pick that plane ticket up, I don't think we can make it happen.
Ben, we got the exquisite joy that only someone who panels at conventions experiences, which is having a question about a specific episode using only the number of the episode as the background information. As reference, like 227, who could forget?
Yeah. Oh, those are the days.
Yeah. I'm with you, Ben. I mean, it's been said before, and we still have the position that if invited, we will go. If elected, we will serve. But airfare must be purchased.
Yeah.
That is our policy on appearances, and it's no different for Worldcon. And so if you were still in touch with those people, I would say ask them about some biz class seats, right? Three of them for you and me and Rob's.
Rob can sit back and coach.
Yeah, that's fine. He'll be fine and coach. He prefers it, actually.
Adam, our next Priority One message here is from Doyle, and it's to Rob's. It goes like this. The guys here at Air Traffic Control all love your two Star Trek shows, especially the bonus episodes. Those two guys you hired to do the talking part are okay too, I guess. I don't know about them, but we all know you're a professional. Anyway, keep up the good work. Let us know next time you're flying, and we'll take care of you. Wow, kind of an ominous end there from Doyle.
I think Doyle could get us to New Zealand.
Maybe Doyle is exactly who Eric needs to be reaching out to.
Agreed. I think they could work together to route a plane we're on across the ocean to New Zealand.
I really like the idea that Rob's hired us.
Yeah. I mean, you want to know why Rob's is flying coach? It's shit like that, Doyle.
You just got him in trouble.
Well, if you would like to invite us to a far-off place or get Rob's in trouble, the best way to do that is over at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200, both of which are a great way to help the ongoing production of The Greatest Discovery.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
I did. I'm giving it to Norman because of those rock-hard nips and that great big package.
God.
He's the milk lemonade of robots.
Oh, boy, he is. God.
I feel like Jennifer Aniston watched this episode of TOS and was like, I've got it. I know what will make my character on Friends popular.
He's got to make Mud feel terrible. Just his very presence must be the reason that Mud wants to flee this planet so badly, right?
It's got to be.
What a terrible, penile hellscape this is for Harry Mud.
Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
I cannot separate the Shimoda from two people. I'm gonna assign the Shimoda to both Scotty and McCoy because their speech to Norman is insane. This robotically practiced, robotically delivered speech that ends with like pointer fingers into the bottom of their chins. It's incredible. I love it. I watched it a number of times and I enjoyed it every time.
Yeah.
Like it's a gift to an actor to act absurd this way.
Yeah.
And I loved every moment of it.
I did too. All right, well, that is our review of iMud. I'm not sure if we have a plan for the next episode of Greatest Discovery yet.
I think we'll come up with something good.
We'll come up with something good. You can.
We always do.
Mark our words. We'll come up with something good.
Have we ever let you down? All right. This is my camera. Is this my camera? Look.
We've let them down.
Other than the times that we've let you down before, does it seem as though we will let you down again? I don't think so.
Not on this one.
We've learned our lessons.
Yeah. We'll be good boys.
I don't know. If it means being punished by Norman, maybe I'll be a bad boy.
Ooh. You'll be a naughty little boy.
Please don't stab me with your nipples, Norman.
Those things can cut glass.
Ooh, my.
All right, well, we'll leave it with Rob's from here. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That's Sulu doing McLaughlin Group ending.
I guess it is.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Make sure the show continues by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks, we'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.